Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2008 Home Education Conference held in Virginia Beach, Virginia.
I have spoken about Thomas Jefferson education for about 7 years, and I've heard other people speak and have been in Thomas Jefferson education forums and conferences and seminars. I've noticed a question that creeps up or comes up quite often. I don't know if it's been asked today yet, but I'm going to tell you what that question is. What if all he wants to do is play Legos? Or what if all she wants to do is crafts? Or what if all he wants to do is ride bikes? But the reason why I ask this is because this question keeps coming up, and I noticed this pattern. It was asked almost every time I spoke. And I thought, you know, behind that question, what is the parent really asking? Are they asking, is this working? Are they asking, is this what it looks like? So is there just a sense of insecurity about what it's supposed to really look like? Well, what really brought this home to me was last year when my son turned 17. We were having his family birthday party. He had been seated in the middle of the room on a chair, and as is the custom in our home, everybody had a gift that they were excited to give him. And my 8-year-old son was particularly very excited about giving him the gift that he had wrapped and carefully made. So it became his turn, and it was a heavy, heavy hangover, thy poor head type of deal that we do in our home. Hope you know that, because it would sound really funny if I just did that up here. But and then my son opened this box, and it happened to be a box, an old Lego box. And inside the box was a gift that my little 8-year-old son had made for my older son, Brian. And I don't remember exactly what it was, some little something or other. But what caught my attention was the old Lego box. And he put the Lego box on the floor amongst all the wrapping paper. And all of a sudden I thought, oh, I remember. There was a time when it seemed that all he wanted to do was to play Legos. But he doesn't play Legos anymore. And in fact, how many years, I found myself asking, how many years has it been since he got a Lego set for Christmas, where there were years and years and years where that's all he wanted? For birthdays and Christmas, and he'd earn money to buy other Lego sets. Sometime, where did it go? When did he box up all his Legos and put them under his bed? Where had the Legos gone, and when? And as I sat there, I thought, oh, I had worried so much about whether or not he was playing enough Legos, I thought maybe he needed to do more work or more math or more reading or more something. But here he sat, 6'4", 17-year-old young man, studying, working, well on his way to becoming a man, and taking those steps. So I asked myself, why had I worried so much, and was it really worth it? Did it really help? Now, I would bet that you have come to this conference with worries of your own, insecurities, or concerns that you have. And I'd like you to take just a minute right now and brainstorm or list. See if you can list 5 of those and then circle the most pressing one. List 5 of those concerns and then circle the one that's most pressing. Okay, you can continue to ponder that as we go through a little bit more. Anybody like to share one of their most pressing concerns? Go ahead. Okay, concern about the relationships with your children, right here.
And it's always, am I doing enough?
Am I doing enough? Okay, right here.
I have one with auditory processing disorder. How much
is he getting when I read to him?
Okay, a child with a disorder that, you know, you wonder if he's getting enough, getting what he needs. Go ahead.
Letting go of the control.
Okay, how do I let go of the control? Oh, my three-year-old being ignored. Okay, right here. Am I healthy enough to keep doing this? Okay, great. I want you to keep those in mind because I want to use them a little bit later, if we can. It's helpful to understand where the stress and the worry come from. And I've pinpointed at least four. And the first one is that the principles of Thomas Jefferson Education, the four phases, the seven keys, they look different. They are so different than what our conveyor belt mentality is, what we grew up with, that as we tried to live them, we don't know what they're supposed to look like, what they're supposed to feel like, and we may very well be doing really a good job, but because we're not really sure what they're supposed to look like, we ask, are we doing it? Is this what it looks like? And we get a little bit worried and second guess what we're otherwise doing really well. Second thing, or where the worries might come from or the concerns, is maybe that there is something wrong with a child doing all Legos all the time. Maybe it's a prompting or a parent's intuition that there's something here that does need to change. So that's another, and it's a very real thing to look at and an important message to us. The third one is the comparison thing. We come to a seminar, something like this. We get an idea of how we're going to do it. We go home, and we're just moving along really good. Then we look over at the neighbors, and we say, oh, their girl is already learning French, and she's only six. And we go, oh. We must not be doing enough. And we go back, okay, we're going to learn French. And the next day, the next week, we're looking over that, oh my goodness, that family, look at that child. They're doing algebra 2. She's only 10. Oh, we need to get harder on our algebra 2 because that's what they're teaching in the public schools at age 10, whatever. But you know that sickening feeling that comes when you think, oh my goodness, we're not doing enough. It's not okay what we're doing. When we're looking out there and comparing ourselves, then the stress and the worry come. And all of a sudden we think, oh, what we're doing is not working, so let's go find something else to do. Okay? The fourth one, where that stress might come from, is not having a spiritual confirmation of whether or not it's right to do Thomas Jefferson Education. Instead, you just have heard it, you think it sounds good, it feels good, and sometimes that's a pretty good answer, but really seeking in prayer, is this what I'm supposed to do? Well, what I'd like to introduce to you today is the eighth key of great teaching. This is the key about how we live the TJ Ed principles. This key affects all of the other keys and the phases. This key is called secure, not stressed. The eighth key of great teaching, secure, not stressed. Obviously, stress is not what we want, but that is too much the modern day way of living. Stress. I believe that stress is a symptom. It's not something we have, it's rather a symptom of a deeper something that is not aligned. It's a mentality or a way of seeing things or thinking about things. Stress weakens relationships, and without strong relationships, Thomas Jefferson Education principles or any kind of education really can't work. Okay, so to be secure in it is very, very important. When I think of the word secure, I think of steadfast, sure, safe. Those are the words I think of. And in fact, a picture from a book I've read, and maybe you've read it too, from a book called Little Britches by Ralph Moody. In this part of the book, The family has just come from the East. They've worked really hard to scrape together enough money to make this makeshift type house. It's not much, but it's something that they've got. And then a great big wind storm comes, and it begins to tear at this little tiny house and their out barns and the different things that they've worked so hard to build up. A huge wind, a big wind, and the shutters tear off and the doors jam, and finally the father realizes that the family is in danger in the house. So he takes a rope and he ties it first around his waist and then around each one of the children's waists. I think there are five of them. And then around the mother's waist. They're all tied together with a rope. And he breaks the window, climbs out of the window, and into this great big wind. And they have to crawl, because if they stand up, the wind just blows them over. And they have to crawl through cactus spines and sagebrush. And they do it for hundreds of yards until they get to a little gully, an overhang in a gully, where they can be kind of in a little cave-type place, where they're safe and secure out of the wind. But the picture I have is this family crawling across this and the big winds trying to tear and rip them apart. A child sits up trying to take a spine, a cactus spine, out of their hand, and the wind just tumbles them as far as the rope goes. But when I think of secure, I think of that rope and of this family tied together securely, safe from the confusion and the winds of this world. I've been doing Thomas Jefferson Education for almost 8 years, so I've been in the community, and known a lot of the people, a lot of the conferences, a lot of the seminars. I've done a lot of teaching in it myself, and talked to a lot of people about it. And I've done a lot of mentoring in there too. And what I am sensing is a needed shift in the way Thomas Jefferson Education is applied and lived. I'm sensing it is about shifting from the head to the heart. A shift from the spirit of the law from the letter of the law to the spirit of the law. A shift from our own understanding to God's understanding of how to live these principles. The eighth key is about learning how to make this shift. Living with a stress mentality keeps us in this little tiny rat race of a circle up here. Whereas what we really want to do is to move from here to here into this deeper well of living, the deeper, more needful place, the good part. And what comes to my mind, and I'm going to write just secure here, stress. What comes to mind is the Mary and Martha scene in the New Testament. Listen to this verse. And Jesus answered and said unto her, Martha, thou art careful, which translated is worried, and troubled about many things. But one thing is needful, and Mary hath chosen that good part, which shall not be taken away from her. The eighth key is about learning to live and apply the principles from this place rather than from this place. And this is vital to our ability to implement TJ Ed and to grow the greatness that lives in our home. This analogy is really powerful to me. If I were Martha's child in this scriptural story, and I went to look for her, I would find her worriedly, carefully serving in her little place here. If I were Mary's child and I went to look for her, I would find her at the feet of the Savior and probably sense and feel something totally different. So where we are is where our children will find us, and it's what they will experience. So our job as parents is to find that secure place and to live there. And I don't think we can totally get rid of the stress or the worry or the overwhelm. I think they're going to rear their ugly heads repeatedly over and over again. But I think that we can choose to live here. And I'm going to now give you three companion principles that help us to find the secure place, specifically in Thomas Jefferson education principles, but you can also apply this generally to your life in almost anything. Okay, so the first companion principle, specifically about Thomas Jefferson education, is to work the principles. You've got to work the principles. That means the four phases and the seven keys. How many of you think that you could just name the seven keys or list them on your paper really quickly? I challenge you to commit them to memory, to really think about them enough to remember them and to know what they are. Because in order to work them, you've got to really know them. So when you come to a challenge or a worry, like some of those you've listed today on your paper, you say to yourself, okay, I've got to work the principle about this concern. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. I think I've used this one already today. Forgive me if I have, but we'll just take it in this context. When I see a child in my home, and right now it's my 10-year-old that seems to be struggling with this, or my 12-year-old, or my 15-year-old. Actually, I just know it. I just see it. Periodically, I see that they're not really excited about anything. They're not really motivated about anything. And so I need to work a principle. Now, there's mentor, not professor. There's classics, not textbooks. Inspire, not require. You, not them. Quality, time, structure, time. Which one do you think I would use to work in this situation with a child who seems to not really have an enthusiasm, an excitement, or a passion?
Inspire.
Okay. Yeah, you could use inspire. And one of the tools I use to inspire is to mentor them, to take them aside and talk with them. Ask them, what's going on? What's happening? What would you like to be doing? What are your goals? What do you want to see happen in the next week or whatever? And always when I do that, I'll do it and talk until the light comes back, or at least until I can see something and understand something that needs to happen. So that's an example of how you can work a principle. Let's see if we can think of another one. Anybody want to use what they wrote down and we'll work it together? Go ahead, what's yours?
Will a son of mine ever read well enough to enter the scholar phase?
Okay, will a son of mine ever read well enough to enter the scholar phase? What principle could she work? The seven keys. Okay, they could mentor, yeah. Reading the classics to them, exemplifying the process, you not them. What about structure, time, not content? Would that have anything to do with a young man learning to read, a boy learning to read? Exactly. If you structure the time in your home so there are long spans where reading is probably one of the most favorable options, then you're gonna have an opportunity to encourage him to read, and keeping him off the computer and out of the distractions is one way to lead him into reading. Did you have a comment?
What about quality, not conformity?
How would that work?
Well, if you think my kid's got to be at a certain level by a certain age with his reading skills, maybe you're focusing a little bit too much on conformity or standard versus
Uh-huh. Okay, excellent comment. Excellent comment. Okay, so that's good. Let's talk about the principle simplicity, not complexity. Anybody have a problem out there that you think simplicity, not complexity would really help with? How about how do I get time to study as a mom or a dad? Simplifying helps a great deal. Or how do I build relationships? Someone talked about making sure you have strong relationships. I just feel that I need to share this story. Two years ago, we had a summer storm in the evening. Thunderstorms, lightning, and it put the electricity out. And it was getting dark, and it was bedtime for the baby, so I went upstairs to put the baby down for the night. When I came downstairs, I noticed that everybody had gone to get candles or flashlights. And when I came down into the living room, came to the bottom of the stairs and just turned and looked into my living room, And there were candles flickering, and the light was kind of flickering off the shadows off of the walls. And there sat my husband in the middle of our big couch with the little children all draped all around him. And there sat there were my two girls laying out all over the floor. And there was my 6'4" young man of a son all draped over the love seat, literally arms and legs dangling. And they were talking about physics. And then I just stood there and watched, and then it turned into a story. Dad was telling a story. And I just stood there and thought, my goodness, what have we lost in the complexity of our high-tech world? The simplicity of just gathering around the hearth, being together, talking, listening, sharing, basking in the warmth and security of a father. Simplicity is really important in being able to get time for your own study, making sure that relationships happen. Okay. Anybody else want to use what there's on their sheet for a practice session about work, the principles? Okay, so her question is, so how do you get laundry done and how do you keep your toddler happy and keep the house clean while you're doing all the educating, right?
Yes.
Okay. So how do you structure time effectively and so it really works when you have little small children who have no structure? No, it's, you know, it's not snack time, but I'm hungry. It's not snack time, but I'm hungry. You know what I mean? It's time to pick up, but I want to play. No, you know, little children don't have a structure. I understand how difficult that is. But structure, I would work structure for that. Structure time, not content. In one of my earlier classes, I talked about how structuring time, not content, is my savior as far as my house is concerned. It keeps me sane because I know that there's a time in the day when we will pick up the chaos of learning and living and it will be clean for half an hour. it'll be clean maybe until we go to bed, but I've had to learn to live with the chaos throughout the day and learn to pick up at a certain time, and it seems to work really well. I wish we could pick up after ourselves right after we get done doing things. But I'm not a very good example of that. I just get going in my projects or whatever I'm doing, and I get things out just as much as the kids do. So that's, anyway, structure time, not content, and that's just something you have to prayerfully figure out the structure for your life. Any other ones you'd like? Well, I think we probably better move on, but let me just tell this story about inspire, not require. I read a book about a woman named Dorothy DeLay. She was a famous violin teacher. She taught at Juilliard. And she was Isaac Perlman's violin teacher, if you know anything in the world of violins. She's a very excellent teacher. She had a student that she was trying to teach to change. She wanted her to change her bow hold and her bowing techniques. But this student just totally resisted her, and she had a very strong will and a strong nature. She said, no, I don't want to. I like the way I'm doing it. And she wouldn't change. Now, Dorothy DeLay could have just said, well, if you're not going to do what I want you to do, then you're out. I've got other, a waiting list this long. I could have people who want to do what I want them to do. But Dorothy could see the greatness in this student, even though she had a strong will, and which is probably a really good thing. She just would patiently, occasionally remind her of the bowing techniques and how she wanted her to do it. The girl wouldn't accept it until one day when she actually heard other students of Dorothy DeLay perform using those bowing techniques and bow holds. Then she heard the difference and saw the difference and was ready to make the change. So the inspire, not require, working that principle. Okay, so that was the first one, work the principles. You see, the seven keys are so different and so, well, kind of the opposite of what we've been taught, that when we don't feel like it's working, we think we need to go look for something else and go find another way to do it. When in reality, what we need to do is just dig in and work the principles and really learn how to do them. It takes time, it takes effort and trial and error and falling on your knees and getting back up again, putting the band-aids on and just going forward. Okay, the second companion principle to the eighth key is to understand and trust the process of Thomas Jefferson education, which in reality to me is the process of growing in greatness. And when you couple it with walking the path of wisdom that we talked about this morning, it becomes a real powerful, powerful thing. So understand and trust the process. Years ago, my family and I were finishing planting our garden. It was evening. The sun had just set over the mountains in the west and over the Great Salt Lake, and it was a beautiful evening. And my family had all gone in to get washed up and get ready for bed, and I found myself delightfully alone in the garden just finishing up. And I had this really distinct thought come to me. The thought was, there is nothing I can do to speed up the process of these plants and these seeds. I cannot force them to come to fruition before God and nature allows. I can only work in the process and trust it, understand it, and support it. That's all I can do. How many times do we try to force our children to grow? And how many hours do we spend in fruitless worry that they're not growing fast enough or haven't borne fruit yet, when in reality they're not ready to do that yet? And how many times do we despair that the fruit will never come? I can't force my son to grow any faster than God and nature allow, and you can't force your children either. We have some very funny gardening mistakes in our gardening history to illustrate this point. One year we grew tomato plants, and my husband said, "This is going to be great. We're going to stake them, and we're going to clip as they grow, and and use these ties, and we're going to stake them. They're just going to grow up beautifully, and all these red ripe tomatoes are going to be hanging from them, so easily to pick. We just walk down and just pick them." But we had 9 foot tall tomato plants that year. 9 foot tall. It was a jungle of tomato plants. Not one tomato. Not one tomato. Another year, we planted strawberry plants, and we watered them and thought, they're going to be the best strawberries. They molded in all the water. We didn't get a good tomato. Good strawberry, get the right thing here. Another year, we like baked potatoes at our house, and we love freshly grown potatoes. They taste so much better than the ones in the grocery store. So we planted our potatoes, getting everything all mixed up, and we fertilized them and made sure that they were going to grow really good and watered them. They grew into big, bushy, green plants. We were just excited. The day of harvesting came. We dug down to find just a small 3 or 4 potatoes per plant that could fit in the palm of my hand. See, we'd fertilized them too much. We didn't understand the process. And if it isn't the right thing, more of it will not bring the fruit we're looking for. Growth has to be governed by principles of truth. A garden planted in winter is obviously not going to work, and neither is expecting scholar work of an 8-year-old. Because of our background in public school, it's hard. We don't have a natural understanding of the process of what it takes to grow in greatness. And we worry about the speed of the process, and that worry robs us of the joy of where we are and the importance of the work of that very season. Now, I know Julie early talked about the phases or the seasons of learning. Each child will go through those differently. For example, one of my children, my oldest, went through his love of learning years. He spent hours with Legos, but he also did other things too. He was doing building and observing nature, taking apart all kinds of things, making slings, hammocks, and bird traps. Reading and writing were low on his priority of how to learn and what activities he wanted to do. But another child, my second child, a girl, she read voraciously. Until one day I thought she was going to read everything in her house, which is a lot. She did crafts and sewing and cooking, painting. She wrote poetry. Didn't do very much math and not very much writing if I asked her to write. But if she wrote on her own will, she wrote a lot and wrote beautifully. You see, children grow differently and distinctly in the soil of our homes, the soil of family culture. Working, playing, reading together, being together. And the soil's not perfect, but perfection isn't the point. in some places it's too rocky or too hard, but children grow sometimes because of the family culture, sometimes in spite of the family culture, and that's really okay. Working the soil is part of the process, and it's working the principles in essence that enriches and replenishes the soil of the family culture. Let me give you five things about the process of growing in greatness to help us understand what this really looks like. And then I'm going to give you two examples, or some examples that illustrate it. Five things we must understand about how greatness grows. The first one is, greatness must be chosen, not forced. You can't force a person to embrace their greatness and to grow it. It must be chosen. Number two, greatness must be inspired, not manipulated. Number three, greatness must be supported, not squelched. You know those tomato plants I was talking about? They were very well supported. No tomatoes, but you know, you get those tomato cages that support the plant so that they don't just lay on the ground and get all squished. So they need to be supported, that idea of being supported with a trellis or something. Number four, greatness is unique. It's not the same. Everyone's greatness is going to be different. And number five, when greatness is growing, the experience is joyful, not drudgery. So joy, not drudgery. There's a certain feeling when someone is really growing their greatness. It's joyful. They've chosen it. They're inspired. They want it. They're supported. Okay, let me give you some examples of what I mean by those five elements of growing greatness. With my oldest child, when he was 8, I just had a strong feeling that he needed to play the piano. He never asked to play the piano. This was long before I learned about Thomas Jefferson Education and Inspire Not Require. So I just said, Brian, you need to play the piano. We're going to start you in piano lessons. I don't know if he would have ever chosen it on his own, but I felt strongly that he needed music for the functioning of his brain because he had some learning problems. So we did, and he didn't balk too much. I don't remember too many tears. I remember he didn't really particularly care for the lessons, but he didn't mind practicing. But I could tell he had a gift. One time he went to a recital, and this was him. He wasn't nervous at all. He was just playing his piece and going like this. And not even just looking around the room as he played, because he could just do it. Well, at age 11, I had another inspiration about him, and that was that I needed to let go of it. I needed to say, it's your choice what you do with the piano, and if you want music in your life. It was a hard thing for me to do, to say, it's your choice. Gratefully, he chose in. He's now 18. He still takes piano lessons. He still practices. He still loves it. He composes and has studied theory, and music is going to be part of who he is and what he does in this world. And even if it isn't, he's grown and learned from it. So that was Brian. Then came along Erin, and she wanted to start piano. Well, kind of, but we started her in piano, and she was into it a year, and it was just a miserable experience for everybody, including the teacher, because she was not really kind and wasn't a real patient learner and got frustrated, and she really fought against it. And so after a year, I finally put us all out of our misery and said, okay, fine, you can quit. She came to me not too long after that. She said, Mom, I really want to play the violin. That's what I really want to play. I said, but I don't know how to do the violin. We have a piano. I know how to do the piano. And she said, but it's the violin, Mom. Well, it took 3 years to convince me that it was real, and that it was the violin and that's what we should do. And I was still worried about the money, and I was still worried about whether or not we could do it. But oddly enough, we've never had problems with the money, and she has never had to be asked to practice. She practices because she loves it, because she wants it, and because she chose it. And it's part of who she is. along came daughter number three, and she too wanted to start the piano and went pretty good and then just kind of petered out on it. I don't want to take piano lessons anymore, Mom. It's just not my heart's just not there. It's the flute. I really want to play the flute. And I said, oh. I said, but we have a violin. Would you like to play the violin? I know how to do the violin now. How about the, no, you don't want the piano? Okay. So finally, I said, okay. And she quit piano. And at age 10, I started her in the flute. It fits her personality. She's vivacious, energetic, and expressive. It's just who she is. It's odd for me to say, it feels odd to say it fits her, but it does. And she loves it. I don't have to tell her to practice. She's making great progress. And it's great. Along came child number four. He asked to play the piano, so I gave him piano lessons myself and pretty soon put him with a teacher. There were a lot of tears with this one. He would just cry as we were trying to learn a new piece. And then he'd learn it and he'd love it. And then came the next piece and he'd cry and then he'd learn it and he'd love it. And this process was quite agonizing to both of us. And finally he just kind of petered out and said, I don't really want to play the piano, Mom. But it's good for you, John. You need to do this. It'll be really good for you. It's a great skill to have, and you need to do it. He says, if you force me, I won't like it. I said, you're right. You're very right. Mom, it's the guitar. I want to play the guitar. Did you get the point? They know who they are, and we can trust their inclinations. We can follow their lead. We can listen to them and let go of our own narrow-mindedness. All of those things that I thought we couldn't do it, I thought we couldn't afford it, I thought, you know, whatever. We've worked through all that, except for we're working on the guitar still. We haven't found a guitar teacher. My good friend has watched us as we've homeschooled. She loves the Thomas Jefferson Education and Philosophy. Hasn't done it in her own home, per se, but is trying to do it in the fields of her life, the areas in her life that she can. And she said to me just a few months ago, she said, I've watched your family over the years. And I've watched other families. And she said, you know, your children come into their own. The timetable is just different. So we can trust that process of the way greatness grows. So understand and trust the process. Companion principle number three is to seek inspiration. I talked a lot about this morning with the parents on the path of wisdom that I taught. But I'd like to touch on it again because it's so important. Abraham Lincoln said, I have been driven many times to my knees by the overwhelming conviction that I had nowhere else to go. I have been driven many times to my knees by the overwhelming conviction that I had nowhere else to go. Our country was founded and has been preserved on that principle. And it's a principle we can depend on as we struggle to learn and implement correct principles of education. Forgive me if I'm repeating some of what I've said today, but I think I've said a lot and I can't remember what I've said. So 4 years into our homeschooling, as I think I've mentioned, we just lost our love for it, and we were kind of burned out, kids and mom both. And that's when I got down and asked for direction. How do I do this, and where do we go? And that's when I found Thomas Jefferson Education, and I was so excited. And I went home and said, okay, we're going to do this, and let's just do it. Let's just learn. And the kids just kind of went, oh, Mom. And I fell flat on my face. It took going back again and again to hear it over again, to read the book over again, to learn it a different way from somebody else, to talk about it, to discuss it, and to really work through it. It was like a puzzle. It was the process of putting a puzzle together. And that puzzle's not complete yet. But as I have struggled, you know, as you work the puzzle, you look at the box to get the big picture. It's like looking to God to get the big picture. And then you look at all the different pieces, lots of pieces, and you might pull out all of the edges and do the edges first, and you might then do it by color or texture or whatever you choose to do, but you kind of just start to work the process of the puzzle. And then amazing things happen as you do the puzzle. I don't know if you've ever had this experience, is you're just doing the puzzle, and all of a sudden you just pick up a piece and plop it right in. You didn't think about it. It was just an epiphany or an aha. It was inspired somehow. So this process of putting a puzzle together is like kind of my experience with learning how to do Thomas Jefferson education in my home, and I'm still learning, still working at it, still struggling with it, but I've come a long way, and I've got a bigger picture than when I started, which is really encouraging. It wouldn't be very encouraging to have still a smaller picture at this point, but... And I promise that's kind of the process, and as you work to put those puzzle pieces together, seeking God's inspiration repeatedly, over time, the picture starts to come together. So as you seek this inspiration, remember, do it specifically. Ask specific questions. Think it through. The scripture says something about, you took no thought save it was to ask me. When you've got a question, brainstorm it. Look at the different places. See if you can come up with solutions. Work it through and then go to the Lord specifically with your ideas. And specifically ask how the principles can work in your home and ask for understanding of the process. And the other thing is to be cognizant or mindful of ideas that just kind of pop into your mind, but that seem to address an issue you've been working on and talking about and praying about. Be mindful of those and be ready to do something with them. This really works, and those ideas really do come. I'm going to give you a couple of examples from my life, and not because they're the perfect examples, but because it can work in your life. You can get the inspiration too. Last year, I was talking with Diane Jepson, and many of you know her, and it was in January it wasn't this last January, but the year before, and she was telling me about her preparations for going to Europe with George Wythe College. And I had never really, the thought had never entered my mind of my own son going, but as we talked, I had the idea that he needed to go to Europe. It was just one of those little outside ideas that just kind of came in of its own free will, but addressed some issues of what my son needed at the time. So I followed through with that, asked Brian what he thought about it, asked my husband, we talked about it, we prayed about it, and it felt right. So I said, okay, let's do this. And he did. Taking him to the airport, my firstborn son, the first one to fly the nest, right, was really kind of a traumatic experience for me. Now, there are people in this room that are older than me, and you've had, you know, kids fly the coop before, and you're still alive. Well, it was hard on me, and the next morning, after he had been gone for 24 hours, I was a mess. I thought, this is really hard. I don't know if he's okay. And I got a distinct impression as I was just studying my scriptures I had some distinct impressions, which I can't really fully articulate right now, but God helped me to realize that was inspiration and that it was right for him to be there and that he would come back with more direction for his life and more purpose and more knowing who he is. And he did. And I was happy for the next 4 weeks while he was gone, and I was okay with it. But I had to seek the inspiration. I had to seek that confirmation. Another time with one of my sons, I could tell that it was, well, actually, I didn't even know. I'm seeking to teach them at the right time and the right ways, the different things that they need. And an idea popped into my mind, But again, it's those ideas that come to us out of the blue but make a whole lot of sense, and they work on an issue that's on your mind. And with John, it was that it was time for him to read, and that this is how you could teach him to read. And in that little idea that popped into my mind came the whole process of how I was going to teach him to read. Nobody taught me that process, and this is what it was. Every night when I read to my three younger boys, all I needed to do was to play really silly games with the sounds, the phonic sounds. So we'd go ba 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 da ba, and we'd do a dance or whatever. We just really crazy. We didn't videotape it. I don't have any record of it, but I was really animated, and we had a great time. He had no clue he was learning to read, and learning to read has never been a struggle for him because he didn't know that's what he did. But he knows how to read. Just little inspirations like that can lead you. There's so many times I just look back on over my path and I can see it. And I bet if you were to really look back over your path, you would begin to see that too. So seek inspiration. recently I hit kind of a wall with homeschool and TG Ed. I think this happens as we grow and as our children grow, and we wonder, are we really making the, and are we really doing this well enough? Are we measuring up? My son took the ACT and was getting ready to go to college, and I was a little bit disheartened by his ATC scores, and I thought, oh my goodness, are we doing this okay? Is this good enough? What do I need to change? I've got six more kids coming up. That's the stress started to hit me really bad. Oh, have I got to change something? I'll change it. Just show me, please, what do I need to change? And distinctly, the impression came, just keep going. Keep working the principles. Keep trusting the process. Keep seeking inspiration. And little by little, it will unfold. Just keep going. And so today I say, just keep going. Work the principles, trust the process, and seek inspiration. And you'll walk the path, and you'll find what's right for your family and how to apply it. And you'll be in this more secure place. The truth is, God wants us, wants our children to have a great education. He wants them to be all they can be, and he will help us in our role to do that. Our job is to apply and live the principles, not only from our head, but from our heart. Not just from the letter of the law, but the spirit. Not from our understanding, but from God's. That's our job, to live here in this way. Let me just end with this quote by President Eyring. When we put God's purposes first, he will give us miracles. If we pray to know what he would have us do next, he will multiply the effects of what we do in such a way that time seems to be expanded. He may do it in different ways for each individual, but I know from long experience that he is faithful to his word. He will work miracles. And they will be those miracles will be evident as our children become who they need to become and as we become who we need to become in fulfilling God's missions for us.
LDS Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.